Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu einer neuen Folge unseres Podcasts Colajotenu. Ich bin Esti Rubitz, ihr kennt mich und ich bin heute hier mit Rebecca Blady. Diese Folge werden wir zusammen mit Rebecca auf Englisch sprechen. Genau. Hi Rebecca.
Hallo. Ich kann ein bisschen auch Deutsch, aber
Okay.
vielleicht auch verstanden mehr, besser mit Englisch.
Okay, so we will start in English. How are you, Rebecca?
I'm good. I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for the
Amazing.
invitation.
So, guys, Rebecca is a rabbi, a female rabbi, and she has an Orthodox education, can you say?
Yeah, I would call it an Orthodox smicha, an Orthodox ordination.
Ordination, exactly. So, from that, where did you study? What was your yeshiva?
I studied at a place called Yeshivat Maharat. This is a seminary in Riverdale, New York. I studied, it's for women, so I studied with a class of only women, with five other women. It's a very, very beautiful place, not without its challenges, of course, as any place, but what was so special about my time there is that the women were of all ages and all generations, because it's very new to pursue smicha and to be Orthodox.
Yes.
Very new. So
Yes.
you had women who came from all kinds of backgrounds and all kinds of careers. There were women who were, many women who started out as lawyers who ended
Oh,
up
wow.
pursuing the rabbinate. Well, it makes sense, right? Because in an Orthodox smicha, a big part of the education is law. It's
Right.
halakha.
Right.
So a lot of women who were really passionate about learning Torah Sheba'al Peh and Mishnah, but never had the chance to actually see that where that could go as a career, came to Maharat.
Amazing.
So that was really inspiring for me to see. And then there were also women who just came, who were closer to my age, who also just came from different places in their lives where they just really wanted to be in a position to offer knowledge and care to other people. Like really, like Neshei Chesed, really people who wanted to give. And that was really special. Of course, it was hard. There is a lot of scrutiny on that institution because it's doing something very novel and pioneering, which
Yes.
is teaching a smicha curriculum to women.
Yes.
Nevertheless, I really learned halacha. I really learned deeply how halacha is constructed, how to learn the Gemara, the Talmud, how Rishonim interpret and analyze the Talmud, how Achronim then paskin based on the Shulchan Aruch and based on, all the different interpretations of what we should do as Jews to remain close to Hashem over hundreds of years. And so, it's very, very difficult. I would not say that I give much psak myself, actually, at this point in my life. Certainly not without asking my own Rav. Some things I know and whatever, they're like intuitive questions. But a lot of big questions I wouldn't give it myself because it's a very serious work. Very serious thing to research and to understand these questions. But that's where I studied and that's what I learned.
Amazing. So you mentioned that the place where you learned does something very pioneering and something that's very, very new. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that this is considered something new? And do you feel like there is any halachic reason why women shouldn't be rabbis?
Very good
Or when
questions.
women shouldn't be able to have a smicha?
I got the smicha, so I figured it out, I guess. So there's many arguments that have come up over time. First of all, I don't think it's new that women are in positions of spiritual leadership. That's not news at all. We have had rebbetzins in communities forever, and those rebbetzins are amazing. Okay. And also, by the way, I was very involved in Chabad when I was a student, and I'm still super close with both my rabbi and my rebbetzin, and their leadership model is equal, legamre. Like, as you can see, like when you step into their house, they are both in charge.
Beautiful.
So, like, it's not new. What is new is the fact that we as women have access to the core texts of Judaism that make up the knowledge for why we do what we do. So There is a very important article by Rav Chaim Soloveitchik called Rupture and Reconstruction that I will quote a lot thinking about this. We do things as Jews for two reasons, or I should say rooted in two ideas of tradition. One idea is mimetic tradition, and the other idea is written tradition. When you have mimetic tradition, it's the word mimetic comes from the word to mimic, to imitate something that you see. And when you grow up in a Jewish family, you have the opportunity to see things done, to see Shabbos made, to see a kosher kitchen kept, to live as a Jewish person. And you can then take those practices as you've lived them and bring them forward into your own life. When you have written tradition, that means you're able to pick up a book, study it, and learn what to do. You know, yes. pretty straightforward. I am blessed with both.
Okay.
Not everyone is blessed with both.
Yes.
There has been a generations-long process in opening up Jewish texts to women. Okay? In the mimetic tradition, we haven't seen it necessarily so much. Like, and I'm speaking more about like in the 19th century, in the 20th mm-hmm. century. Like, it was very rare for a woman to actually, even before that, naturally, but it was rare to see a woman sit and study Talmud. Mm-hmm. But what the women did have in a super strong way was that mimetic tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The women carried and modeled what it looked like to live a Jewish life. The new thing about women's leadership today is that they also have access not just to the mimetic tradition, but to the written tradition. They can actually open the books, okay? And this is new, but it's not new. I know we're talking about also from the days of Sarah Schneer, the founder of the Beis Yaakov movement, right, advocating Jewish education for women. I mean, this goes back already more than 100 years.
Yes.
And what's happened, I think, is something really, really important. It's validating this idea that a woman can study and a woman can get knowledge, and there's actually no reason why not. We have debates, you know, stemming from lines in the Mishnah. Okay, in Mishnah Sota, we see an argument that teaching one's daughter's Torah is tiflus. You know this?
Yes, the famous one.
Tiflus,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's foolish.
Yeah.
And yet, when we come down to how that works, it's actually much more complex than that. There are rabbis who say, but we should still teach women the halachas that they need to know to live a halachic life. And then there are rabbis say, actually, we can teach them chumash. They should learn the Torah. They should know what's there. And gradually, as the generations went on, the arguments for women's study have become ever more expansive, to a point where I really believe that learning is an important part of what it means to be Jewish, and to accumulate that knowledge and to practice from a place where you know what you're doing. So it's not always easy as a woman, obviously, to encounter difficult texts like teaching your daughter Torah is foolish. Like, that's very tough to encounter. But we need to know what's there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We need to know what's in our tradition. Because if we don't know it, then we can't engage with it and we can't encounter it. We can't dismiss our tradition as just a bunch of misogyny, because then we're rejecting who we are. And it doesn't work. It just doesn't work. Yeah. We have to engage with it. We have to engage meaningfully with it, even when it's challenging. So the way that I decided to engage with this is to actually study enough to receive smicha.
Beautiful.
There's an argument that, you know, if a woman decides to pursue a PhD,
mm-hmm.
and she passes all her exams and, you know, has all, you know, defends a dissertation and has all the right credentials, would you not give her a PhD?
Right.
Okay. Like, of course you would give her a PhD. Like, yeah. This is 2023. The same logic goes in some sense for, you know, why should a woman get smicha? Okay. It's not a halach. This is not, it's a logical argument, not a halachic argument. There's obviously also halachic arguments.
Right.
Pro and against, of course. But in my mind, reaching this level of knowledge should come with a title.
Mm-hmm.
It's also important that it comes with a title. Because in today's day and age, I think now that more women than ever do have access to that written tradition, it's a reality. Yeah. And it's a beautiful reality. And we shouldn't go against it. But women also deserve halachic advisors who have this level of knowledge and this level of access to rabbanim, to rabbis, who can support them in making decisions with their communities together in the framework of halacha. So we can make many arguments against women being rabbis, that it hasn't been seen before, it's not snias, there's issues with this idea of srara, which is coercive authority. But coercive authority, if you live in a democracy, mm-hmm. and you believe that, you know, your elected officials are in power because of the public,
right,
and women can vote, right, then women already have coercive authority. So the concept of coercive authority is, and this idea of srara has also really evolved. And I think, you know, these days we see even in leadership of our institutions and organizations, we have Geschäftsführer, we have different levels of staff in all kinds of Jewish organizations who are women. And the whole idea of coercive authority has really evolved to the point when I say that I believe in tradition. I grew up Orthodox. I grew up Frum, you know, like, mm-hmm. really, I understand, mm-hmm. the value of a certain aesthetic in our tradition because it binds us. It keeps us together. Mm-hmm. And yet, when I understand the power of women having knowledge, and it's not a bad power. Mm-hmm. It's a challenging power, but it helps our practice. It will help sustain our practice. Like, we cannot pass down our practice if not everybody is empowered with knowledge. So if that's the case, then I think we also need halachic decision makers, rabbis, spiritual guides, leaders who are also women.
Okay, so obviously, love everything that you just said is absolutely beautiful and so, so important and so, so valuable to all of us. And so, right, so from that point of view, I was wondering whether or not there are people that don't take you seriously as a rabbi, and whether or not there are male rabbis that don't see you as part of, like, don't see you as equal to them.
Of course. What's the question? Yeah, but I mean, I also want to say it's a sensitive question. I think I'm in a position, which is okay for me personally, where I understand that, especially in Germany, this is very new and a significant departure for the way that a lot of communities really understand what a rabbi is. So I'm very mindful. You know, one of the things that I do is I don't necessarily present myself with a title. Mm-hmm. Okay. If I were, it would be the title Rabbi Noreen, which I do use from time to time because it is important to claim the authority. But I also recognize that in certain contexts, that can be triggering for a community or for people, for even for male rabbis who are not there with the concept, who have just a different relationship with Orthodoxy or with Judaism. And I say, by the way, I'm separating out Orthodoxy and Judaism, okay, because I still believe, actually, so Orthodoxy, of course, for Orthodoxy, this is a very big innovation. And so I understand that there is an aesthetic and there's also a halachic understanding of the same text that I'm referring to of why this is not okay. And there I'm very sensitive. I understand that, and I appreciate that reading of, can a woman be a rabbi? And according to that read, no. And yet it's more important to me to maintain relationships with people than to say, excuse me, I'm a rabbi.
Okay.
I want to maintain relationships with people so that I can do good work in communities. And that's my priority. And that's my general approach with Orthodoxy. Mm-hmm. Because there are amazing and kind and wonderful people in the Orthodox world who are doing good work. In my life, as someone who strives to be a Jewish leader, I want to do good work as well. And so if that's the cost of working together, I see it as a small sacrifice. It's okay, as long as we can do our work together. But then Judaism more broadly, okay, so Orthodox or not, there is still, I think, an issue of general gender imbalance in the leadership of Jewish institutions that have actually not much to do with whether one is a rabbi or whether one is working in one of the Gemeinden or institutions, they're just not balanced. There are not as many women as men sitting in positions of leadership at these institutions. I think this is something that everybody recognizes in this day and age. It's not a surprise. It's an issue.
And we are aware.
We are all aware. Yeah, we're all aware of this issue. I think that there are initiatives that, you know, allow us to speak more openly about this, like the Jewish Women's Empowerment Summit.
Right. Yes.
This is a good step. Mm-hmm. But I see when someone more from like the broader Jewish community, I don't know, is confused, like, how are you a rabbi? I explain to them, well, I studied for this. This is what I do. You know, I'm in a position of Jewish leadership. It's a spiritual position as well as a, you know, administrative position, leadership position, whatever you want to call it.
Yes.
And yeah, I'm still Orthodox. I don't lead services like in a synagogue. I do give Divrei Torah in a minyan environment. But I'll explain to them basically, like, these are the limits and these are the roles that I have undertaken. And what I try and do that way is just chip away at a stereotype. I'm trying to chip away at a perception that women are not the default person that someone might see in a position of leadership. Because that is not just about women rabbis. That's much broader in this community, in the German Jewish community in particular.
True. Yes.
Yeah. And a lot of it is about aesthetics, by the way. Like, what kind of scene are people comfortable with? Like, aesthetics make a big deal. And when you see a woman appearing as a rabbi,
right,
it flips something in people's minds. Like, wait a second, that doesn't look like a rabbi. And that's okay, because it's a process. I think I'm in the place where I can say that I'm okay with being, you know, a step in that process. I'm not sure if people who are, you know, 10 years younger than me pursuing spiritual leadership will be as okay with it. And I think that's also okay. Because I think, you know, each of us needs to pursue change at the pace that we need to pursue change.
Right.
So, yeah.
Amazing. But you are such a valuable and incredible step in the right direction. So, there's a topic that personally has bugged me a lot in my life and has bugged many women and girls that I know. And it is a heavy one and it is very delicate. And that topic is tzniut. Now, unfortunately, it is a bit common for young girls to be stepping out of Jewish institutions with something that I call tzniut trauma. And it is a heavy topic. And I would like to ask you, as a rabbi in this instance, that I think you're the right person to ask this to, because there are many people that can't be asked this question or shouldn't be asked this question, that are not helping the case if they answer. And that question is, so tzniut, the halakha of tzniut, the idea of tzniut, is it inherently misogynistic?
SD is just pivoting the microphone to me like, talk. Okay, this is a podcast, a general overview podcast, but we should... I don't know that we have enough time in this episode to do the halacha shir around this, but we should.
Okay.
But I'm not going to give it now, mm-hmm. Although we should make time for that. Okay. The interesting thing about this question, and I was hoping when I saw like tzniut trauma, I was actually hoping to get to this question, to be honest with you, because I was just speaking. I have a chavruta, like a valuable chavruta in my life, who is Muslim.
Oh.
Actually. And it's still a chavruta relationship because we still discuss texts and ideas in this sense. And we do get closer to Hashem as we do it. It's very special.
Right.
And we were speaking about this idea of head covering, actually, because in Islam, I would say the role of head covering is closer to our concept of tzniut in Judaism. And something that we talked about is, and he asked, actually, it was a question he asked me. He said, you know, you have a concept in Judaism of modest dress. So don't you feel like there's something spiritual about that? Like, why, for example, on this show, My Unorthodox Life, have you seen this show? And
yeah.
And like the girls just abandon tzniut, not just a little bit, but a lot.
Right.
Like, why? He said, why do they have to do that? And I said to him, because they're traumatized. I use this exact language that actually the way, especially in the modern Orthodox community, that we're taught about tznut, it's just, there's no explanation for it. And it's shocking. He said, don't you have a spiritual language for this? And I said, actually, to be honest, when I think about how I grew up, no. From age 6, I went to Jewish school my whole life. I went to an Orthodox school. From age 6, we had a dress code. It was skirts to the knees, cover your collarbone, and, you know, cover at least the top half of your upper arm.
Right.
And these were rules. They were non-negotiable rules.
Right.
To the point where when we, as women, as young women, as girls, reached puberty and got to high school, if we didn't follow those rules, we would be publicly shamed by the teachers about that. If our skirt was too short, we would be given a nice long black skirt to wear that sent a message to everybody, you broke the rules.
Damn.
And I have to tell you that if this was a strategy in helping me as a young woman build a relationship with the idea of tznut, it did not work. Because it does, in fact, lead to trauma. So, what do we do with this concept? First of all, I would say that this concept needs to be retaught and rethought from at a very young age to women. We need to start again with age 6.
Yeah.
Because we can't just make rules on something that is so sensitive this is about women's bodies. Okay? I am not advocating throwing out the halakha. Okay?
Yes.
But what I am advocating is that when it has to do with women's bodies, when it has to do, to be honest, with bodies of humans, we can't just make rules and pretend like the rules are separate from the bodies. We have to understand that what we are giving our girls is a value. It's not just limits on how you express yourself. It is, by the way.
Yeah.
We can find a value in that. We can find even beauty in that. We can find sacredness in that. But we can't do it unless we teach girls that there's a reason for this from age 6. Because I know that my relationship with tznut, I have one, but it is, even as a rabbi, having gone through the course of smicha, it's informed by this trauma. It really is. And I cannot deny that. So I have my practice of what it means to appear in the world as someone who's in relationship with Hashem. And somebody who wants to also not just appear as I'm in relationship with Hashem, but also as someone who appears as a Jew.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a really important part of how I dress. I do my best to look like someone who appears as a Jew.
Okay.
With my kisoy rosh, with the rest of, I don't know, somehow how I dress, like sticking to a modern conception of tznut, understanding that also women's clothing includes many more kinds of garments than it once did.
Mm-hmm.
And just being able to have room for self-expression within that. Yeah, I think it's all has the potential to go in a good direction, but I think that the term tznut trauma is very real. Yeah. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah. I mean, sure. Why not?
I'm curious, like, what on this topic, like, what are people saying? Like, is this a reason that they would leave a Jewish community or leave Jewish practice?
Yeah, absolutely. In my experience, I think, you know, I also grew up in Jewish schools, obviously, from age 6 and even before that and whatever. And it is my personal opinion maybe, but tznut trauma is way too close to sexual trauma. And that is very heavy. And that can, especially, I think there's something there's something that some people are sensitive. Some people are maybe a bit more sensitive than others, maybe have less thick skin, maybe wear their hearts on their sleeves a bit more than other people. And that's not a bad thing at all. That's actually a great thing. It can be a huge, huge power. But these people, unfortunately, take it the hardest. And obviously this depends on a person. But from what I know, from girls that I grew up with, and also from girls that I didn't grow up with that live on the other side of the world but still went to Jewish schools, we have way too many of the same experiences when it comes to that. Mm-hmm. And I personally call it new trauma. That's my that's my wording of it. But whatever people call it, maybe some people call it sexual trauma even, which makes sense. But whatever people call it, it's unfortunate. It's a very common experience from way too many people from like all over the place. I didn't know whether or not I wanted to talk about this originally. I had this written down in my notes because I thought this is a good opportunity to do that. But it's hard and it's so new. It is so, so new that I feel like we are, and I include myself in this, we are a generation of girls that came out of Jewish institutions that talks about this and that takes it the way that we take it, which is very seriously. Mm-hmm. And I don't know of a generation that did this before us that talks about it the way that we talk about it with each other, not publicly.
Interesting.
So this is not something that I personally, this is part of the reason why I hesitated talking about this here right now, is because I don't see much of this conversation being held in public, but I see it so often being held in private.
I mean, that's why I think, like, it's great that you brought this up, actually. I mean, this is exactly one of those conversations that we have to move in to the public sphere, because I think that your connection between, as you call it, new trauma and sexual trauma is so real. And it is so devastating. And we are letting girls down. We are letting girls down. Because when they are taught to limit how they can use their bodies, we are giving them the message that there is something controlling their bodies. And if a girl has been through hell and traumatized in that way, then that message, of course, is going to send that girl running. And this is why we have to talk about it.
Yes.
Okay? Like, actually, yes. Like, the halakha of tzniut is putting something in control over our bodies. But it's not helpful to teach our girls that unless we can do so in the scheme of greater values. I will say this, being very transparent here. When I graduated from my high school, there was a strong push for girls to go study in a midrasha, in a seminary. And I did not want to go. And the reason I gave, and give today, is because I could not stand the idea of spending a year somewhere where they would tell me how to dress. I needed to go somewhere where I could make my own choices, and I went directly to university. And I needed to go on my own path of dressing it the way I felt. It was never extreme, by the way. It was just a matter of, I never wore pants to school in my life. I never understood what it meant to actually feel modern, to be Jewish and be in the world. And dress was a huge part of my exploration of that. After college, after university, when I, you know, took some jobs, went through my own evolution, made the decision gradually to go to Maharat, to pursue smicha, to go back into that system that has a dress code, I chose it. I chose it with my values super clear. I wanted to live a life grounded, not just in halakha, but in knowledge of why we keep halakha, which is what makes me more comfortable engaging with the topic of tzniut, and why we should also have our halakha shir at another point. But also that I think today, especially for adult women and young adult women, choosing to engage with the topic of tzniut is also choosing to engage with the topic of identity. Because when we choose our dress, it all comes down to who we are. And if we want to show that we are Jewish and that we are living as members of a Jewish community and we want to reflect that in our dress, let tzniut be a part of that. But let women come to that, to understand that if they want to dress in this value, and if tzniut is part of this value, that there is a beautiful way to do that that also includes choice and that also includes creativity, customization, that it's not taboo and that it's not shameful. I think there is a way we can be really proud of our bodies and really proud of who we are and how we work and walk in society while dressing as we are Jewish. But I think we need to build some new language around that in order to re-understand how this halakha has treated our girls until now.
I think something that I think a fear that I have around this is that people may not understand and may see it as, well, you went to school, your school had a dress code, you know, and just like reduce it to that. Like, schools technically are allowed to have dress codes.
Yeah.
It's up to them.
Of course. But they're not allowed to humiliate women in the name of religion. In my opinion, I don't think that our religion is calling for humiliation in the name of a dress code.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, how tzniut is being misused to cause this level of trauma, which has been around for a long, long time.
Has it?
Oh my God, I'm 33, okay?
You're
like,
not that much older than me.
I know. But you know what? Like, call it whatever. I think it's... but I'm saying, like, when I was young, like, this was around.
Right.
I mean, there's also, by the way, like, the other interesting thing about that is that, and, you know, we quoted before Mishnah Sota, so now my head is there. Like, we do have in our tradition certain moments when women are actually supposed to be publicly humiliated. That is super challenging and super problematic. Okay? But this is what I'm saying. The power of knowledge and the power of understanding. What was the ritual of the Sota? What does it mean to have tzniut? Some of tzniut even comes from that, you know, that part of the Torah that talks about to uncover her hair or undo her braids, depending on how you interpret that pasuk. What do you do with these moments in the Torah that instruct us in this direction of public humiliation of women? What do you do? I don't think we can make those judgments without having women in positions of knowledge. That's the thing. Like, women need to be educated. They need to learn the halakha. They need to learn the text. They need to learn them good, good and correctly, in order to join these conversations so that we can figure out how do you maintain a value like tzniut that has spiritual value in our tradition without publicly humiliating women or privately humiliating women or making women feel ashamed. I'm sorry, you have to include women in that discussion. So let's learn. Let's talk about it and let's learn about it.
Okay, I feel like I can't come back to any other questions. Before, now that we're here.
Esty and I just had a really intense moment of trying to figure out what will happen if we do talk about this publicly. What will happen? I mean, this is the thing. This is also going back to this idea of Srara. What happens when you put a position in what happens when you put a woman in a position, or two women as we are, sitting and actually talking about topics that are of really significant importance to our Jewish tradition and have never been spoken about publicly in certain contexts by women for people. What happens? What happens when you put something like that out there? Who's going to listen? And who's going to make a judgment about us? Who's going to make a judgment about our level of frumkeit? Probably some people. If I'm being real, some people are making a judgment right now. But what I think is important for people to know is that we are talking about this because we care about the future of our Yiddishkeit. We care about the people we are in community with who have confided in us that they have had these experiences. We care about the people who are being actively ostracized from Jewish community because they think they don't look the part. And that is not good. That is not a healthy community. A healthy community is one where we can actually bring our questions, establish ground rules of respect, treat people with dignity, be able to engage on these topics without saying, well, sorry, this is just the rule.
Right.
Of course it's the rule, but rules have spiritual significance and they have a human lived experience. And we cannot consider our rules without that. I mean, I even learned this from my Rosh Yeshiva, that when a rabbi gives a ruling, a psak, it's one thing to know the halakha, to know what you do in all kinds of different situations. In shat hadchak, in an emergency, the chatchila b'di'eved, what happens when you have an ideal situation or a less than ideal situation after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
You can know a lot of information based on all kinds of situations in theory. But the minute that somebody comes up to you and asks you a question, a shoel, someone comes to you, and they ask you to give them a particular answer, a psak, for my situation, the game changes.
Right.
Because you have a person in front of you. You have a person with a life, and your answer as a rav is going to have real consequences.
Right.
And that's how I am taught to understand halakha. In theory, but also for the person in front of me. And when we talk about topics like this, I am imagining a sea of girls in front of me because I know that that's what's out there. Yes. And that's why I think it's important to put these conversations in public. We are not making any rulings right now. That's not the goal of this podcast. What we are talking about is how to have these conversations in a way that makes our community more healthy and more sustainable and better, more inclusive and more knowledgeable and strong.
I want to encourage us, Jewish women, I want to encourage two things. First of all, I want to encourage us to become knowledgeable, to seek knowledge. It is something that I try to do with this organization. I try to make opportunities happen for women to learn and also to teach. And the second thing I want to encourage us to do is to talk about this. Call it whatever you want. Call it sexual trauma. Call it sexual trauma. Call it Steve. I don't care. But I think we should open up this can of worms a little bit. Maybe we should think about how we do it. Maybe we should, you know, figure out a healthy way and do it in a like safe, controlled environment. But I think we should.
Yeah. And also just the beauty of what Esti said is that if you open up this conversation, you know you're not doing it alone. Like that's what we just did here. That's what we did. Like we made it so that our people are not doing it alone.
Yes.
Like you have people on your team. We're all on the same team. We're all on the same team of figuring out how we can live a more meaningful Jewish life and a more committed Jewish life.
Yes.
And we do that with questions. That's the Jewish way. And I think, I hope that's amen to what
amen.
You just said. Yes.
To everything here. Okay. Thank you so much, Rebecca, for being here. For being you, for saying what you're saying. I think this was so amazing. I think I learned so much. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for listening to us. From our perspective, Shabbat Shalom.
It's always a good day to say Shabbat Shalom.
True. And I will see you guys next time.